So today we'll continue with It Is Not Mine Nor Buddha. Absolutely quiet and yet illuminating in a mysterious way, it allows itself to be perceived only by the clear-eyed. Dayo's great Chinese ancestor, Ma Zhu, when asked what is Buddha, said, "This very mind is Buddha." This is the very mind Hui Nung was pointing to and expressing when he said, "It is not the wind that moves. It is not the flag that moves. It is your mind that moves." This mind of Hui Nung and Ma Zhu is not an idea or a philosophical stance. It is the experience of eating with the Buddha's fork and spoon, of sitting on the Buddha's zafu and putting on the Buddha's shoes. And the Buddha, in turn, is sitting on your zafu, wearing your shoes and eating with your utensils. You contain and are contained by. This is an experiential fact, not a point to make in discussion or explanation. Dayo's Dharma heir, Daito, said, "To see into one's nature is to be awakened to the Buddha mind. Cast all thoughts away and see that mind is Buddha. The one who realizes that her true mind is Buddha is the one who has attained Buddhahood. The mind that does not attach to each and everything is the Buddha mind. This is mind as Buddha." But Dayo Anzen wrote, "It is not mind. It is not Buddha." Another time when Ma Zhu was asked, "What is Buddha?" he said, "Not mind, not Buddha." Which is exactly what the Nan Miao Shin said. It is not the wind that moves. It is not the flag that moves. It is not the mind that moves. Whatever arises, it is not until nothing at all arises, and then that isn't it either. This very mind is Buddha, is the night of stars and moon, of shimmering, almost invisible northern lights in the far pasture at midnight. It is the night of owls calling and mice scampering. Not mind, not Buddha. It's the night with no moon, no stars, no owls, no mice, and no shimmering of bluish-green curtains. No mind, no Buddha is you when all marks of identity and location and space and time fall away, or when they are seen through as constructs manufactured to create an illusion of permanence and substantiality. No mind, no Buddha is the doorway and landscape of the wild, of the wilderness, where we hear the sounds of no sound in the resounding echoes of the Nooksack River. It is the wild where we feel the cold of no cold in the northeast wind. And it's the wilderness where we see the colors of no color in the slanting candlelight on the round Zendo window. No mind, no Buddha is saying something without moving your lips or tongue. It is the reality of form as emptiness, where emptiness does not mean nothingness, vacancy, or void. It in fact is vast spaciousness with no bottom, no walls, and no limits. It is the blue sky before clouds, before birds, and before thoughts. although it does not exclude any of those. No mind, no Buddha is absolutely quiet. It yet includes the gathas of geese, the prayers of flags, and the whispering of rutting elk. It is absolutely quiet and yet includes the happy yells of children, the sobbing of unjustly imprisoned Latinos at the southern border, and the histrionic aggressive tweets of a dark-sided clown. It is absolutely quiet, but it glistens as each expounds the Dharma of no Dharma. But when illumination is without the absolute quiet, then distinctions will be made and a harshness of attitude will arrive. If within the quiet the illumination is lost, all will become wasteful and dull. Absolutely quiet and illuminated. This is the seeing of the clear-eyed who naturally feels deeply about life and death, who feels deeply about unborn and undying. And it is from no mind, no Buddha, that deep, unsullied compassion is born and immediately acted on. In no mind, no Buddha, in no walls, no bottoms, all are known as kin, as members of your body, of one body. This is a side note, but that is why Kinhin, walking meditation in the Zendo, is such a lovely practice. We all bow together as one body to each other, and then immediately take the first step as one body. It doesn't matter if you are tired or energized, sleepy or awake, sad or happy. You just move, keeping the same space walking as you have when sitting. There is, in this way, no need to speed up or slow down when someone leaves or joins the line. When we walk as one body, we arrive together at our seats, at the original dwelling, thus fulfilling our bodhisattva vow of only coming over, of only crossing when all others have also crossed. Kinhin is the bodhisattva vow, your vow, in action over and over throughout the session day. One body, which is another way of saying no mind, no Buddha, arriving together home to sit at the hearth, the center place, the heart of the original dwelling. This is clear-eyed practice. Dayo next writes, although it is not mind nor Buddha, it is Dharma, truly beyond form and sound, and it is Tao, having nothing to do with words. These are wonderful lines because they confound our common understanding. Dharma often refers to the teachings, and the first talk by Shakyamuni Buddha was called Turning the Wheel of the Dharma. The second refuge, as you know, is refuge in the Dharma. So I wonder, what are you? What are we taking refuge in? What are the teachings if they are truly beyond form and sound? What are you doing when you're listening to Dharma talks on podcasts or live streaming? Are you listening to the words, taking notes, and studying and applying the teachings? the Dharma that is beyond form and sound. Later in this writing, Dio gives us further directions about Dharma. He writes, "If you desire to listen to the thunderous voice of the Dharma, exhaust your words and empty your thoughts." This is how we hear the Dharma that is before form and sound. And this Dharma is the reality which is prior to heaven and earth. This Dharma is the natural law, the law of the universe. It is the configuration of the universe that in explanation sounds contradictory. Born and unborn, death and undying, being and non-being, nirvana and samsara. But in experience is exactly thus, or is exactly so. When the Buddha was asked about all his teachings, he said he never uttered even one word. That not even one word is the Dharma. And it comes forth, if you are listening with your clear eyes, in the chanting of the lone winter frog. It comes forth in the wind brushing cold branches. And if you're listening with your eyes, it comes forth in the snapping of frost when the sun finally rises over Blue Mountain's shoulder. And it is also Tao. But this is the Tao which has nothing to do with words. Tao means way, and in Zen Buddhism, it is the Buddha Dharma. When we do Jikai or take the 16 Bodhisattva precepts, the student continually says, "I take up the way. I take up the way of not killing. I take up the way of not stealing. I take up the way. I take up the way of not lying," and so on. But again, Dio says it is Tao, but it has nothing to do with words. So what is the Tao? And what are you doing when you take up the way? That is the very question the young Zhao Zhou asked Nan Chuan. Nan Chuan said, "Ordinary mind is the Tao." Zhao Zhou said, "Should I try to direct myself toward it or not?" And Nan Chuan said, "If you direct yourself, you betray your own practice. And I would add, you betray the natural unfolding of your life." Nan Chuan, after another question or two, said, "The Tao is not subject to knowing or not knowing. Knowing is delusion, not knowing is blankness. If you truly touch the genuine Tao, you will find it as vast and boundless as outer space. How can this be discussed at the level of affirmation or negation?" Nan Chuan obviously is using words, but he isn't being used by them. He is both pointing to and expressing the undifferentiated mind, which is the Tao. His are intimate words, echoes with no subject, object, or activity, and they aren't tied to associative thinking and construction. His words don't explain, but express the vast mind of the Tao, of Nan Chuan. And here I'd like to quickly touch on three salient points in the dialogue between Nan Chuan and the very young Zhao Zhou. Ordinary mind is the Tao. The Chinese character for ordinary has its roots in the word constant and eternal. So this ordinary is prior to heaven and earth. Of course, it shows itself in our daily familiar routines and details. But we only know that if our eyes are clear and not dazed and veiled with our typical apprehensions and self-involved concerns. This self-concern brings us to the second point. Should I direct myself or not? When we purposely direct ourselves, we leave out all that we don't know or understand. We direct ourselves towards what we imagine we want or need, but that leaves out what the world, known and unknown, seen and unseen, present and hidden, might be pulling us towards. We are in this together, co-creating and co-mingled in ways we do not imagine. Yes, effort and direction is necessary. It is what, in part, got you to Sesshin and this afternoon's sit. So come with your individual committed to practice, and then let go into what it demands and yearns for. It yearns for you to relinquish. It yearns for you to allow and to be available to what is calling and desiring for you to come home. And third, the Tao is not subject to knowing or not knowing. It is before form and sound. It is before words, feelings, and sensations. But it is always closer to you than your own breath. It is before your own heartbeat, but it continually moves in the direction that your toes are pointing. And after all of this, if you find Nanchuan's words too grandmotherly and mine too explanatory, here might be another more succinct way to say or to express the Tao. The way that has nothing to do with words. This is case 279 from Entangling Vines. A monk asked Bao Ling, "What is the Tao?" Bao Ling said, "A clear-eyed person falls into a well." So what is the Tao? Bao Ling said, "A clear-eyed person falls into a well." That's the Tao that has very little to do with words. A clear-eyed person falls into a well. This is Dharma, truly beyond form and sound. And this is Tao, having nothing or very little to do with words. Dayo Kokushi next wrote, "Wishing to entice the blind, the Buddha has playfully let words escape his golden mouth. Heaven and earth are ever since filled with entangling briars." I've always taken pleasure in these lines. They feel so light to me, and my senses Dayo took joy in writing them. In the mythology of Mahayana Buddhism, we say, initially the Buddha spoke often about nirvana, the other shore. This is the plain, he said, where there is neither earth, water, fire, nor air. Neither the sphere of infinite space, nor the sphere of perception, nor non-perception. Neither this world nor another, nor both together. This plane has no coming or going, no staying, no passing away or arising. It is not based on anything, and this indeed is the end of suffering and its origins. So that's the Buddha's very words describing nirvana. A place where there is neither earth, water, fire, nor air. Neither the sphere of infinite space, nor the sphere of perception, nor non-perception. Neither this world, nor another, nor both together. This plane has no coming or going, no staying, no passing away or arising. It is not based on anything, and this indeed is the end of suffering and its origins. So this is the negative way to describe nirvana. And there are also positive ways, but I'll not list those. Anyway, the Buddha posited another shore called freedom and liberation, which enticed the blind to begin practice. There was, the blind folks imagined, a way out. Remember the question asked of Dongshan. The monk asked, when cold and heat visit us, how should we avoid them? When the cold of death and the heat of suffering and pain visits us, how should we avoid them? And Dongshan said, why not go where there is neither cold nor heat? This was the nirvana the Buddha initially offered the blind. Go to where there is neither cross to the other shore. In the Lotus Sutra, however, he said, and I am paraphrasing, rather badly, I might add. He said, I know many of you will be upset by what I'm about to say, and I know some will leave. But I pointed to nirvana knowing, if I hadn't, you wouldn't have started to practice. You blind folks needed encouragement, and the cessation of suffering of nirvana was that. But nirvana is only a way station, a halfway point. In actuality, you must return from nirvana to find that here, right here, in samsara is nirvana. This is it. And of course, many did get up during his talk and left. Dongshan said, why not go where there is neither cold nor heat? And the monk said, where is there neither cold nor heat? And Dongshan said, when it is cold, let the cold kill you. When it is hot, let the heat kill. So it is right here that we find liberation. It is within our conditions, within the eternal, the constant ordinary, where we find liberation. It is in our joy and pain, in our laughter and tears, and in our weaknesses and strength. It is right here, in your standing, walking, lying down, and sitting. It is right here as we co-create nirvana, which is samsara. And it is right here as we co-create samsara, which is nirvana. So in closing, I'd like to read you a letter Dayo wrote to a student, and her name was Gentai. He wrote, Gentai's determination in seeking the way is keen, and she often comes to inquire further into the basis and conditions of the great matter. One day I said to her, at the top of the 100-foot pole, take a step, go forward. She said, at the top of the 100-foot pole, there is no place to go. I said, where there is no place to step, go 100,000 steps farther. Only then will you be able to walk alone in the red skies pervading the universe as your one body. She agreed and smiled, that's all. Although she has not yet gotten the gist of it, she is not the same as ordinary folk who get stuck on even ground. Another word for the 100-foot pole might be nirvana. But whatever you may call it, it has no power for the way. It is imperative to sit in the shade under the shadowless tree. But just like Shakyamuni, who then got up to tell his friends the good news, we again need to take our place on the ferry and help guide it back to this very shore where it never left.